The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. 8 o'clock hour, hour number two underway on this Thursday, the 28th day of May. Thanks a lot for hanging out today. Phone number is 866-660-5759. Let's get some phone action going. We're going to head in the direction of the phones here in just a momento. Our top news stories of the day, as Gordon just mentioned, the death of Congressman Sam Johnson. I knew this day would come. He's 89. Health was a factor in his decision not to run in 2018. 1 hour ago, we welcomed his successor, the wonderful Congressman Van Taylor. Wonderful, wonderful quote from Van. Because I often wondered, you know, what it was going to be like for anybody to follow the legacy of Sam Johnson in the 3rd Congressional District of Texas, which is North Dallas, Plano, that general area. And Van gave us this magnificent quote. He said, "I can never hope to fill the shoes of Sam Johnson. The best thing I can do is to walk in his path." And that is exactly what he is doing, and that is what we should all do. Personally, you know, politically, everybody's entitled to their views. But I'm going to stick with the thing I said to Van. This really is pretty amazing. If you think about the boldest voting records in Congress, they tend to be people who take a lot of incoming fire, people who are just bludgeoned by the left, and people who are teased by on a partisan basis, you know, at all times. And that never happened to Sam. He was as conservative as you could want, a voting record the envy of any proud Republican, any proud conservative, and yet there was a decency to him and a grace to him that engendered that in others. And speaking of taking in oncoming fire, I simply cannot get out of my head the notion of being over the in the skies over North Vietnam in 1966. Being shot out of the sky and spending 7 years in the Hanoi Hilton. More than three of those years, roughly half of that time in solitary. Every year I received the Sam Johnson Congressional Christmas card, and I get a lot of politicians' Christmas cards, and I know that 15,000 people, other people get them, but it's still nice, and they take their place in our wall o' cards that we always put up, that Lisa always puts up with nice ribbons in one of our windows. And the smiling face of Sam Johnson is in the smiling face of Ted Cruz and the smiling face of John Cornyn and the smiling face of Michael Burgess. I mean, I love all of them because I love those relationships, and I'm proud to be friends with all those proud Texas servants. The Sam Johnson Christmas card always meant, it just really occupied a particularly special place, especially the Christmas card that we got in the Christmas season of 2013. Because there's all the pictures are filled with images of the American military, images of the birth of Christ, obviously, Christmas card, images of Sam in service to the 3rd District of Texas that he loved so much, and the state that he loved so much, and the country that he loved so very, very much. But in Christmas of 2013, the picture that adorned the front of the Sam Johnson Christmas card, it had a picture of him. It was the 40th anniversary, the Christmas 1973. Or Christmas 2013 was the 40th anniversary of his 1973 release, the massive release of Prisoners of War. Sam Johnson didn't get any, he didn't punch any early ticket out. He didn't do anything to earn mercy from his North Vietnamese captors. It was when the wheels for the release of all of our POWs. Remember, the very first one off was Alabama's Jeremiah Denton. We all had, did you all have the bracelets? Did you wear the bracelets? Man, I had like five or six bracelets and wear them interchangeably. And I think Denton was one of them. But the rest of them were guys I didn't know. And that was the point. You wore the Vietnam POW bracelet because it was a guy you didn't know. But you knew him then. And it kept you and your mind and your heart focused on him, his family, his plight, and the desire to have them free. And when they were freed in 1973, then and only then did Sam Johnson get to watch his wife Shirley run across a tarmac as all those prisoners of war were let out of that troop jet for an embrace that he had waited the better part of a decade to feel. And in the Sam Johnson Christmas card of 2013, it is the picture of that embrace from 1973, 40 years hence. When Shirley passed away in 2015, the light of his life, I get the sentence that occurs to me is I didn't know how Sam would go on. And I sensed he would, and he served for three more years in Congress, but and I was at events with Sam all the time, emceed things for him all the time. And I remember the first one, Shirley was ill for a long time and she was unable to be there. She'd been every time I was doing stuff, you know, events for Sam in 1996, 1997, 98, 99, 01, 04, 05. Shirley's always there. There's Sam. There's Shirley. Joined at the hip. Just an unbelievable couple. The definition, just as he was the definition of what it is to be an American, the definition of what it is to be a conservative, he was the definition of what it is, what it means to be a husband and father. And so there was Sam, there was Shirley. And there were, I think, a couple of events. Was it the better part of 2 years or maybe two events within 1 year, like 2014, that I'd be at an event for Sam and Shirley wasn't there. She couldn't make it. And I would always say that my prayers, and I just was a room full of people with prayers for Shirley and prayers for Sam. And in 2015, Shirley passed away. So yesterday, I thought about that Christmas card. I thought about that embrace in 1973 and how incredible that must have been. And then I thought about the embrace that would have happened yesterday. The embrace, the reunion, and the difference in this one is this one doesn't end. Because when Sam and Shirley were reunited in 1973, they both had X number of years left on the planet as they embraced again in God's heaven yesterday, reunited again. That reunion lasts forever. Well done, good and faithful servant. Rest in peace, Sam Johnson. 866-660-5759. Thanks everybody for hanging out with me yesterday in the online launch party. Oh man, I ran home. I had a bunch of stuff to do. I was running kind of late, so I called Lisa and I had her fire up the NASA TV 352 on the DirecTV. I just said hit record and step away. And as after the show ended, there were the astronauts Bob Behnken and it was just a remarkable, remarkable thing. Watching Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley driven up to the launch pad in a Tesla. Usually it's a massive van that looks like it's delivering uniforms to a dry cleaning factory or something like that. That's what usually does. Just look back at the video of, you know, Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins in these big bulky suits, and they're carrying these big tanks that's essentially their air that they can breathe. And but it's so streamlined now. Now they look like they're on some high water fishing expedition in the Montana of the 25th century. That's what those suits looked like yesterday. And the visors flipped open. Hey, big thumbs up, because it's just, you don't have to bulk up quite as much to be in space in 2020 versus 1969 or whenever. And so they went in the elevator and there's cameras everywhere. They go up the elevator and there are these guys that look like ninjas with big numbers on their backs. Like, what are each of these guys doing? And it showed them, and they got in, and then they're looking up at the control panel. Every control panel in every spacecraft looks like a large fighter jet instrument cluster from the military planes of the time. If you want to Google like the Mercury or Gemini capsule instrument panel, it is these ancient rotary analog things. By the time you get to the shuttle control panel, the shuttle first launched in 1981, it is substantially more modern. But when they strapped into this thing in those space age suits that look like they're from like a 1980s movie and kicked back into those touch screens and those, it looks like they're in the inside of the inside of a Tesla, that big screen you get in a Tesla where you can, you know, see what's going on in your car or dial up a ZZ Top playlist just by swiping. It was crazy. And they're racing the weather and everything's good. And they're loading the liquid oxygen and they're getting ready to go. And like 20 minutes to go, it's like, we got to get the final go for the weather. 15 minutes to go to get the final go for the weather. And then you could hear the weather officer say, guys, we're just not going to launch. We're not going to launch. And I know what I thought. I know what many of you thought is like, what a gut punch this must be for these guys. What a bummer. What doesn't that just suck the soul right out of you to be ready to go? The event of a lifetime. And wah, wah, wah. Nope, got to get out. And by the way, you don't get to get right out. It takes like 45 minutes to suck the super cold liquid oxygen out of the vehicle because you're still on top of a bomb at this point. And so they had the launch escape system still plugged in. They're all suited up. It was the better part of an hour before they could even get out. It's like, ugh. What a beatdown. But I got to tell you, that too is part of the training. You know that could happen. And Bob Behnken in particular said over the loop, he said, look, I know everybody's bummed out and everybody's watching and we were all stoked and we were totally ready to go. But we are ready to go on Saturday and we're just going to meet up back here and do it again. That's the spirit. That's the astronaut spirit. That's the NASA spirit. That's the SpaceX spirit. That's the American spirit. We're going to get this done, and it's going to be fantastic. And, oh, by the way, President Trump was there, and he booked right out of there as soon as it was clear we weren't going to get a launch. Wow, got to go. What's he going to do, stick around for 3 or 4 hours? If they'd had a launch, he was going to speak to NASA employees, SpaceX employees, make a big old to-do out of it. With no launch, he said, nah, I'm going. And Mark Noller, great reporter, I think AP, said it's unclear whether the president will come back for Saturday. And I just said, oh, he's totally coming back. He's totally coming back. He's coming back bigly. And it has now been revealed that I think president and the vice president are going to be there for the launch on Saturday. And I can tell you, weather's dicey for that thing, too. So get ready. Maybe play a couple of rounds of golf, because if they can't go Saturday, they can go Sunday. So this weekend, we're going to fire off something here, and it's just going to be fantastic. 821, Mark Davis, your call's next, 660 AM, The Answer. Coming up, 835, very cool lady going to join us. You may remember when she was running for office, there was an ad featuring her on a farm. And she said, I grew up castrating pigs on a farm, so when I go to Washington, I'm going to know how to cut pork. And it's like, whoa, what was that? That was my favorite campaign ad of the decade. That was Senator Joni Ernst, a proud veteran, a proud Republican, and she's going to join us 8:35. Going to check in with her on stuff. She's written a book called Daughter of the Heartland, about just sort of the middle America values that are often sneezed at by the bi-coastal elite. Senator Joni Ernst in about 7 or 8 minutes. You guys are right now, 866-660-5759. We are in Palo Pinto. Bill, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Spectacular. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Is it clear enough? Mark, first off, I want to say thank you for the piece you just did on Sam Johnson.
My pleasure.
I hope that you will capture that and put it online for other folks to hear it later in the day.
Oh, it's always on the podcast. If people are getting in the car right now at the beginning of the show at 7, and then just a few minutes ago, beginning of the 7 o'clock hour, beginning of the 8 o'clock hour, just go to 660amtheanswer.com, click podcasts, and the beginning of both those hours, it's right there for everybody.
Okay, here's... as you closed that, I lifted a prayer for Sam and his wife. What an incredible picture. But a prayer for you as well, for your voice in North Texas, for people of faith. Thank you. That's all I got to say.
Well, I am honored, and I can't tell you what that means to me. Thank you, thank you, thank you, sir, and good day, and stay safe. In Dallas, J.D., Mark Davis, welcome. Happy Thursday.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good.
Hey, I have a question about Flynn, and another one hit me also. It's always bothered me about the Flynn case and how they talk about this phone call with Kislyak. Flynn was DNI director under Obama and then got crossways with him and he let him go. But nonetheless, he knew phone calls were listened to all over the world. Why they would think that Flynn would do something on a phone call to set himself up to have an investigation like this is just absolutely ludicrous.
What
Mark.
A great question. He did have the expectation of masking, an apparently baseless expectation, where if you are talking to somebody like the Russian ambassador, you may or may not be identified, but your point still stands. With everybody listening in on these sensitive conversations, what kind of idiot is going to do something that would be so blatantly criminal? And most of the folks who know about those conversations say there's simply nothing actionable in there.
Right, and even the mafia doesn't even use electronic stuff, but nonetheless...
What was the other thing you had? Because I got to scoot.
Okay, outside of the bedwetting in Russia in the Steele dossier,
mm-hmm.
What in the world is in that dossier besides that would incriminate Trump over something?
Well, the short answer is nothing. The dossier stands discredited. The people who wrote it stand discredited. The people who paid for it stand discredited. And it's all part of one of the biggest hoaxes, one of the biggest malicious dirty tricks in the history of American politics. And now the question as 2020, you know, rolls forward is, will there be accountability for the people who damaged this country so severely by dragging us into that rat hole? We shall see. J.D., thanks. All right, Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa joins us next. 8:31, Mark Davis, 660 AM. The Answer.
Dream.
Hey, Mark. Why the Everly Brothers? And I would reply two ways. Number one, I love the Everly Brothers. And number two, the Everly Brothers with roots in the state of Iowa. See what I did there? See what I did there? Senator Joni Ernst is here, and boy, are we going to talk about stuff. Senator, welcome. It's so nice to talk to you. How you doing?
Thank you, Mark. I'm great. And that was so appropriate. The Everly Brothers, they grew up in a community just about 20 miles from where I grew up and where I still live today.
Okay. Now, they, for some reason, are we talking Shenandoah or nearby?
Shenandoah, you betcha. Southwest Iowa. Shenandoah Falls. Kind of split between Page and Fremont County, and the Everly Brothers' home is still on the main street of Shenandoah today, and it's tiny. It is tiny. I can't imagine growing up in that small space, but they certainly were very, very special to us.
Well, there's nothing cooler than traveling the roads, the back roads, the vistas of Iowa, which I've had the chance to do many, many times. It's always been for incredibly exciting moments like the Iowa caucuses, but that's placed me there in January for those hellish winters you people have. But it's nonetheless fun. I have great memories like 2012, the final event of the Rick Perry presidential campaign. A great trivia question. Where was the last event of the Rick Perry presidential campaign? The answer is the town of Perry, Iowa, at a little boutique hotel, the Hotel Patti or something like that. So there's a lot of politics, a lot of fun. And here you are with a book called Daughter of the Heartland, My Ode to the Country That Raised Me. We always talk, we always discuss and weigh out the difference between the way the bi-coastal elites feel versus people here in my state of Texas, mm-hmm. your state of Iowa. It really is simply a demonstrable way of thinking and living. And what made you want to crank out a book about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, the title says it all, you know, My Ode to the Country That Raised Me. I think I've been blessed To have been born into the family that I was born into and taught to work very hard at a very young age, but then also just the amazing fact that most of us are born into this wonderful land that we call home, and that in this country, which I believe is the greatest country on the face of the planet, provides us or affords us opportunities that so many other folks in other countries just can't experience because they don't have those same opportunities. So, I credit my folks to the great work ethic that I have been given, shoveling manure or, watching little piglets be born out on the farm, whatever it is, and I still live in that same community, just 5 miles from where I grew up. My dad is still out on that farm. But it really taught me resiliency, and that resiliency growing up on a farm is what carried me through so many difficult spots in my own personal life, but certainly also when I served in the military, when I was deployed for Operation Iraqi Freedom, and then certainly as I moved through the United States Senate and the quagmire that we call D.C.
So you heard that Tom Harkin was not going to run, and so that was going to create a Senate vacancy. And speaking of your agricultural roots, I mentioned it in telling listeners earlier that you were going to be on. Tell me about the moment sitting around, I don't know, a campaign office or with an ad agency. I don't know. I want the story when someone, whether you or anybody else, came up with an idea that said, wait a minute, let's have her stand in a stall and talk about having castrated pigs as a girl. And that means, hey, I know how to cut pork. And then the pig squeals, the logo shows. Tell me about the creation of one of the finest campaign ads in history.
Oh, thank you. It was great. I'd hired an ad group that was working on messaging, and they wanted to know all about me. And they, one of the gentlemen, his name was Todd Harris, and he said, hey, let's talk about how you grew up. What was it like on the farm? Because he didn't grow up on a farm. And so I just started walking through all of the mundane chores and things that you do on a farm. And we got to that point where you talk about cutting hogs or castrating hogs. And he was like, wait, what did you just say? He literally went to his room that night and Googled it and pulled it up on YouTube. And he said, I started to watch it, and he said, I had to stop. I couldn't watch anymore. It made him so uncomfortable. But, those are the things that you learn how to do. When you're a kid growing up on a farm, you do messy, nasty jobs. But, my folks taught me that no job is beneath me. So these are the things you have to do in order to feed a population. And so they decided, wow, that is something that will catch notice.
Every political ad has kind of an identifier and like a title, and that actual one, it was called Make 'em Squeal. Just awesome. The other one that I remember seeing at the time, the other one, you were up on a Harley, and that was about, hang on, I found the ad copy. Joni Ernst, mom, farm girl, lieutenant colonel, and you're packing this massive gun. She'll take aim at wasteful spending. And I love this. And once she gets her sights on Obamacare, Joni's gonna unload. It looked like you were having
fun.
Campaigning is brutal. It is thankless. It's lots of bad food and shaking a million hands and your feet hurt. It looked like you were having fun. And you know what? It's looked like it ever since you've been, ever since you were elected to.
Well, thank you. And I do. I do have fun, and I love campaigning because it means I get to be out and about with the people of Iowa. And, of course, this year is a little different. It's been really hard for me. But I love to be out there. I love to go to the Iowa State Fair and give people hugs and shake those hands and, get out and visit. I mean, it's just so important to do that, and I really do have fun campaigning. You have the naysayers and the nasty people out there of the world, and you know what? I just let it roll off my back. Just because they have a miserable life doesn't mean I have to. So I enjoy it. I enjoy it very much.
Yeah, and so here we are, and you're a few years in. How have you found actual governing, actual legislating versus your expectations?
Well, I was very used to the Iowa way of doing business. I came out of the Iowa State Senate and went into the United States Senate. And in Iowa, you know, we don't have fancy offices. You sit on the floor of the Senate at your tiny little desk and you do your work. And so it's easy if you see a member from the other party that you're trying to get something done with, or, you know, whoever it is, you have a disagreement, you go grab that person and you go to the back bench. We have benches that line the outside of the floor there, and you go sit down and you work through it. You talk through it. And it's very difficult to do that in Washington, D.C. You know, everybody's in their own little world, their own little compartmentalized space, and to get on their schedules, you know, if you want to have a substantial talk, sometimes it'll take a while to get on somebody else's schedule. And it's very different from the Iowa way of doing business. But you know what? If you're persistent enough, you keep pushing enough, you find ways to collaborate, you can get things done.
So a political year, you talk about how it changes your political life. We're trying to get Trump reelected. We're trying to get the House back in Republican hands, trying to keep the Senate red. How do all of those prospects look to you in this very odd, off-kilter political year?
And it is really difficult. And I can only judge maybe by Iowa standards and the folks that I talk to across, you know, the entire state. But what I would say right now is that I think that President Trump carries Iowa again, and I think he's reelected to be our president. I think that we can hold the Senate. I think we are very focused on jobs and economy and getting the workforce back up and moving again. People here in Iowa are anxious to get back to work. So I think we stay focused on that. There are a number of other issues out there, like prescription drug prices that Republicans are trying to tackle. I mean, there are so many things important to our constituents that we continue to drive forward on. Just look at the difference between what the Senate does and working together in a bipartisan way to find solutions for COVID-19 and the recovery process. And then look at what the House did in their bill that Nancy Pelosi just proposed. Another $3 trillion of spending with a bunch of stuff that's not even COVID-19 related. And I tell you what, Iowans get pretty darn fed up with elites from the coasts, whether it's the East or West Coast, trying to sock it to the folks here in the middle, say, hey, we're going to take your taxpayer dollars and we're going to bail out the states that have really poorly managed their own budgets. You know, that's not going to happen. Iowans aren't going to stand for it. I don't think Texans will stand for it either. But we need to have a very pragmatic, careful approach as we move forward. And I think constituents will appreciate that as we move into the fall election cycle.
Speaking of those fall elections, anybody doing the math remembering civics 2014? That means Joni Ernst is running for re-election this year. You guys don't have you don't have your opponent yet, because I think the Iowa primary is coming up in a few days, correct?
It's Tuesday. Yes, I'm excited. I'm anxious to know who my opponent will be. I have a pretty good idea. Chuck Schumer backed one of the candidates over a year ago and has been raising all of those coastal elite dollars. He's been raising those for the candidate here in Iowa. And I think people are pretty upset about that. So they don't like to see somebody from New York City, you know, choosing a candidate here in Iowa.
New York City!
You know, but he's the one that's got the money, though, so I'm sure she'll be the candidate. But again, I love campaigning, and regardless of who my opponent is, you know, I'm going to run on my accomplishments and my ideas and just stay focused on the people of Iowa.
And how's the Iowa reopening going? How are your COVID numbers? How are things going in terms of, you know, the business communities of Iowa? And then how's it affected the agricultural community that's so important? Just how's the Iowa reopening progressing?
Well, it has been tough. I think COVID has been rough on every state out there, but we are very fortunate, and then we are one of those more rural states, and we have a phenomenal governor. She did not shut the entire state down, just a blanket order. She followed CDC guidelines and has been very good about protecting the population. But it has been hard. You know, you can't shut agriculture down, and we still have livestock, in particular our hogs and some of our poultry flocks that have nowhere to go because we did have COVID in some of those meatpacking facilities. And so we do have hog farmers that are euthanizing hogs. We have poultry flocks that are being culled. I mean, it's pretty sad. But the American farmer, just as you would see in Texas, is very resilient. We will make it through. It's going to be hard, and there's hardship in anything. There's risk in anything. But, you know, again, going back to my roots, and whether it's flood, whether it's drought, you find a way through, you pick yourself up, and you drive on. And that's what we intend to do here in the state of Iowa. We intend to get everybody back to work safely, get them back on their feet, and let's drive on. And, you know, that's what we know how to do, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
Senator Joni Ernst chronicles this attitude in Daughter of the Heartland, My Ode to the Country That Raised Me. Go get that. Follow her on Twitter at Sen, as in Senator, Sen Joni Ernst, J-O-N-I-E-R-N-S-T, and use that spelling to get to the ernst.senate.gov website for her senatorial stuff. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Good luck. Let's talk during the campaign or whatever. Let's go beat the Democrat
sounds
of choice.
Great.
And it's just and Kim Reynolds is governor, whom you mentioned. Boy, look at the Iowa women. Look at you guys stepping up. I mean, this is the way to get
amazing.
It done. This is the way to
well,
get it done.
She's my mentor. She's my mentor. Love her dearly.
Well, listen, it's a great joy to have you. Thank you, and happy campaigning and safety and health to you and yours. Much appreciated. Great to talk to you.
Great. Thanks, Mark.
You bet. That is Senator Joni Ernst. The book, Daughter of the Heartland. Go grab that for some quality reading. 8:51, Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. The Answer. Okay. That was Joni Ernst. She's cool. Always liked her. Let us dance on out of this hour. Little Johnny Mellencamp, little Key West intermezzo. And let us get into the 9 o'clock hour. And I referred to yesterday in the news as an emotionally mixed day. I had a huge anticipation of the SpaceX launch, and then wah, 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 didn't happen. Okay, I'm ready to tee it back up, get it ready to get Doug Hurley and Bob Behnken into space on Saturday at 2:22. And by the way, I ain't got no show on Saturday, but I got a Twitter account, and we'll be hanging out together in the wonderful virtual online Space Dork Watch Party. They're starting, I don't know, 1:30 or 2 on Saturday afternoon. And then the Texas Supreme Court, thank God, thank God, thank God, Texas Supreme Court brings to a halt this ridiculousness stemming an out-of-control San Antonio federal judge who a few days ago said, hey, there's a right. We're going to invent a right because it's what we do in the world of judicial tyranny. There's a right to vote by mail in Texas. Guess what? No, there's not. That comes from the legislature, not from an activist judge. Texas Supreme Court rules the right way, but I'm sure there'll be appeals and it'll go to the U.S. Supreme Court, where everybody better have their ducks in a row there, if you know what I mean, John Roberts. And then Minnesota's on fire, Minneapolis on fire with rioting. We'll talk, and I don't know what makes me more sad. Actual rioting, actual, pillaging, looting, thievery. I mean, that's depressing enough. But then you get people justifying it. Oh, they're really mad. They're really, really upset about George Floyd. I'm upset about George Floyd, but I'm not smashing in the window of a Target. So we got, and then really the thing that reaches out over all these stories, the passing of my friend and a hero to all who love liberty, the great congressman and the great military hero, Sam Johnson, passed away at 89 yesterday. So I've got a little something to say about all of those. And I bet you do, too. And maybe you got something to say about something I didn't even mention. Guess what? We allow that. 866-660-5759, the rollicking active 9 o'clock hour about to unfold. Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m., The Answer.